Thank you. Is somebody the timer or?
Oh, great. Okay.
How much time do I have? You know. 40 minutes. Okay. Hey, everybody. I'm Jessica. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is October 14th of 2018. So this past October, I celebrated 7 years in recovery. I definitely did not do that alone. I did that because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't do it. Well, like, I let God do it, I guess. before I start sharing, like, how I got here and stuff, I'm just going to check in because that's what AA taught me to do. I'm not okay, but I'm sober and I'm here. The person who sponsored me for 7 years is in a rehab right now, and it's just kind of painful. Not to make it about me, but it's just, it's, and this young woman that I sponsored for 4 years decided she doesn't want to be in AA, so it's kind of like I'm in this free-falling state where, like, I'm holding on to the sponsor, and we're going to be together forever, and I'm holding on to the sponsee, and we're going to be together forever. Let's trudge the road of happy destiny, you guys, and it's like everyone's falling off, and then it's just between me and God, and that's what I'm really starting to see is, like, there's nobody, not one person who can keep me sober. It's just a willingness to walk in here and also to ask God for help, to ask you guys for help. So it's been a really humbling experience. All right, also talking about where I came from. So I'm from Miami. I was a blackout drunk from the beginning. Also dabbled in a lot of other stuff, but I won't talk about that. Just know when I say alcohol, it can mean a lot of different things too. But I was a blackout drunk. The first time I know that I blacked out was maybe I was 15, St. Patrick's Day, and all my friends were drinking. But I'm the one who, like, I just remember I stopped being able to see. You know, I could hear everyone, but, like, I couldn't see. And then I'm, like, feeling for the wall. And then my friends, like, took me upstairs and I snuck back down because, like, you know, I wanted to keep the party going. And they're like, how the hell did you get here? We tucked you into bed. And that's pretty much how my drinking looked. And, I mean, there was a lot of harming other people. But, like, a lot of times it was fun, you know, I mean, from what I can remember, I guess. But even before I picked up a drink, I know now, reflecting, you know, that I've always been an alcoholic. I was, like, primed and ready to pick up a drink. I never felt like I belonged, and kindergarten was the first time that I felt that way, and I was like, oh, everyone here knows how to behave, and I get sent to the corner by myself, and there's something wrong with me, and nobody wants to talk to me. And that's the message that I heard. I'm sure it was just like, hey, Jessica, like, you're being really chatty, now's not the time to talk, but, like, me is like, oh, no one likes me, and that's just, like, how I'm an alcoholic, you know, just kind of taking everything to an extreme, and I guess from then on, I stopped, like, I think I remember being, like, a really expressive kid up until I started going to school, and then I think that's when I started caring what people thought, and then I started to pretend to be somebody that I wasn't, and had a lot of fear, and I used to cry myself to sleep, and I didn't tell anybody, which I think is kind of odd, now that I look back on it. Like, for one whole summer, when I was 15, I cried myself to sleep every night, the whole summer, and I would just wake up the next day and put ice on my eyes, like, for the puffiness, and just try to, like, move on with the day, and that was before I even really started drinking, so I think I was 16 when the St. Patrick's Day I blacked out. Anyway, so when I found alcohol, it was completely life-changing. I felt relaxed because I also had a lot of trouble sleeping. I had a lot of anxiety. I would run through the whole day, like, oh, what happened? What could I have done different? What do I think they think about me? And then what happened? And what's going to happen later? And how can I control that? And it's just like, so I just really didn't sleep. And alcohol calmed a lot of those thoughts. And, well, it obliterated them, really, and I didn't have to think, and I didn't have to feel, and I think I was really just running away from feeling about my thinking, because my thinking was screwed up. Anyway, so I guess I didn't realize I was that blackout drinking was not normal until a friend of mine was like, hey, how come you never remember anything? And I was like, oh, is that weird? Is that not drinking? And then they're like, no. So I tried controlling. I'm like, okay, well, just wine and, you know, just beer. And like, I had really a lot of like goals of like building a really high tolerance and not throwing up, because I was always the one who threw up, and I was just like tired of being like labeled as a throw up girl. But eventually I made it, and then like I guess I was a lot of fun sometimes, and then other times I was a complete nightmare. But anyway, something happened. Like, I started failing out of college, and because I was showing up high to class. And then, so that was the first time that something clicked in me, that like, I was like, oh, like, let's just get this piece of paper, you know? And so I decided that like, I would use alcohol and outside substances as a reward system. And that worked for a little while. That was like my controlled drinking. That was my version of controlled drinking. Was like, you can drink and do whatever you want, as long as you want, just turn in your assignments and go sober to class. And I did the same thing with work. And that worked for a little while, and eventually I became a workaholic, because somebody told me I was good at something, and then that felt like a drug, so then I just really wanted people to keep telling me I was good at something, so I really worked my butt off, but a lot, for the, like, the wrong reasons, and I used it as, like, I thought that was the only thing that made me a person of value, was having, like, a degree, and doing the job that I do, and thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous, I know it's something that I do, but I'm a lot more than that, and it's not who I am, it's what I do, and who I am today is a sober woman. You know, I have dignity today, compassion for other people. So I'm going to move forward. I moved out of my parents' house from Miami when I was 25. And I moved to Fort Myers, which is just a couple hours away. And that's when I really saw how I drank when nobody was around on a daily basis. Because up to that point, I would black out on Friday nights and Saturday nights, and I would drive home. So I was pretty much blackout drinking and driving for like 5 or so years every weekend. Somehow did not get arrested. I don't think I harmed anybody. I'm not sure. I was blacked out. But the car looked fine the next morning. I would wake up gasping, like, look out the window. I was like, is the car there? Okay, if it's there, does it have a bang on it? Did I leave anything in the car for my parents to find? And it was like this whole, like, panic every weekend, every Friday, every, like, Saturday morning, every Sunday morning. But when I moved out, then it became every night. And as soon as my family left, then, like, this is 10 years later, right? From when I was 15, crying myself to sleep. Now I'm 25, I'm drinking a couple bottles of wine and crying myself to sleep every night with my nice new apartment that I live on my own, and I have a career, and it's like the first full-time job, and, you know, like, in my career, and like, I'm completely miserable, and I don't know anybody, and I just cry on my porch and smoke cigarettes and drink. And the crazy thing is that I always thought I was going to have a couple glasses of wine. I was always like, oh, it'll be a couple glasses, and I would always buy one. Really, really thinking that I would just have a couple, but then what started to happen was, like, I'd drink the whole thing, and then I'd walk to the gas station and get another bottle, and this happened every day. So, yeah, like, I didn't understand what the insanity of the disease was until I really looked back on that, and also the phenomenon of craving, because even if I have the best of intentions, once I put liquor into my body, I don't know what I'm going to do, when I'm going to stop, what I'm capable of. And my life got progressively worse, and of course, you know, meet another alcoholic, and who's worse than me, because I'm going to fix you, and, you know, you're worse than me, that's an alcoholic, I'm not. And needless to say, that got, like, really bad really quick. Finally got honest with my parents, because I was like, everything's great, I'm fine. And then, oh, he's chasing me with a taser, can you come save me? I hit his liquor. and so the truth had to start coming out. But I've been used to living like a double life. I always wanted, since school, I wanted to look a certain way on the outside, and I looked on the inside, and I was always really dishonest about what was going on with me. And And there was a lot going on. I mean, I did end up moving out living with that person. But then, I mean, it was one thing after another. And, like, where I lived had bed bugs or mold. And I never had enough money to get out. And I was just, I wasn't really into, like, prayer. I was when I was a child. I had so much fear as a kid, like, 7 or so, that, like, I'd pray myself to sleep. But I think I was praying without realizing it. And I was asking for help because I wanted to get out of Fort Myers. And I got a random phone call. And it was someone who said, hey, like, we want to hire you, come to Tampa. And I was like, awesome, I'm going to, like, start all over again. And so I moved to Tampa 7 years ago in the summer and went to a bar to meet friends, you know, like, that's what we do, you know, like, I moved to a new city and go to a bar to make friends. And that's how it always starts. But thankfully, that didn't last very long. It took me 3 months of living here to walk into AA, and I got there because the illusion I had created that I could get through my job and have my reward in the evening didn't work this time, because the job that I picked, or the job that I was hired to do, I had to get up at 3:30 in the morning. Well, it was 2 a.m. and I'm still pouring myself a glass of wine, and I was like, and I'm like thinking, like, you shouldn't be doing this, like, why are you doing this? But, like, I couldn't not do it. And that's when I started, and so I showed up drunk on my birthday, and I was like, oh, it's just because it was my birthday, so, well, this won't happen again. And then it happened again, and it was just like a random Tuesday, and I had been blacking out for like 3 nights. It was 3 nights total, but maybe there was like one night in between where I didn't. Anyway, there was a fourth night in there somewhere that I just, like, was so messed up from the night before, I barely remember. I was in my apartment throwing up, I think. But essentially, I was blacking out for 3 days, and something occurred to me when I was walking down the hallway drunk at my job, and I was kind of struck by something, and I had a vision, and I saw myself starting to drink when I was a teenager, till that point when I was 28, and I realized that I had never had just one drink, ever. And I realized I was an alcoholic, and that had never occurred to me before. I was always just like, I'm just sad, I'm just like a depressed person, I like to party, you don't get it, you know, but at that point, nothing like completely horrible. I didn't lose my job. Like, I didn't, you know, but it was inside. I was, spiritually bankrupt, and I was totally empty. And the crazy thing is that job that I had working at 3:30 in the morning, the one other guy who was with me, his wife was 2 months sober in AA. And I was like, oh wow, dude, your life sucks. Like, that sounds really hard. She sounds like a mess. And I was like, oh shit. Okay. Like, so I turned around and from the hallway and like walked into his office, and I was like, hey man, I think I'm an alcoholic. And he gave me his wife's number. And that lady with 2 months sober was the first alcoholic I talked to. And I still to this day don't think she realizes how much she changed my life. It was the first time, like, I was so scared. I didn't understand why I couldn't stop drinking. I didn't understand this disease. I didn't understand that there was hope or a solution. And she gave me that. She identified with me, and she gave me hope. And that night, I went to my first meeting. I went to a women's meeting, which I randomly picked. It said Sunshine. That sounds great. Women's. I guess that might be a good idea. And I just walked in. And I had no idea how to pick an AA meeting. I didn't know anything about AA. And this woman walked up to me glowing and was like, are you new here? And I was like, yeah, I'm new to all of this. She was like, oh, you're the most important person in this room. And I remember being really taken aback by that. And then all the women proceeded to tell me all of their stories. Women who had 10 years, 5 years, 15 years sober, still there. Like, they're just in this room, you know, telling all of these crazy, horrible stories. But, like, they were laughing about it and smiling and holding their heads high. And I left there, and the next day I called my mom and I said, Mom, I think I'm going to be happy. I had started to get this like glimmer of hope of like, wow, like, cause I never understood what was wrong with me. And then therefore I didn't know that there was a solution for what was wrong with me. So yeah, I was always trying to seek happiness in substances and try to force it or try to, like, you know, anything under the sun to try to force it. But I mean, yeah, I heard what you guys said. You guys told me get a sponsor, work the 12 steps, don't work them on your own. Read the big book with your sponsor. You know, get a home group, get a service position, keep showing up to me, to come to a meeting every day. And sometimes I went twice a day because I didn't do treatment or anything. So, like, I stole it to work, and then I was just like, okay, I don't know how to talk to my boss. I don't know how to, like, send this email. Like, I don't know how to do anything. And so I would call my sponsor sometimes, like, 3 times a day. I'd go to 2 meetings a day. I'm just, like, sitting on my hands on my couch, you know, because I'm still new in town, so I don't know anybody. So, like, pretty much my whole life right now is, like, built on AA, which is pretty cool. And, man, when we worked those steps, I didn't understand what was happening at the time. And honestly, I didn't understand what happened to me until I sponsored someone else. And that's the magic of the program. And I did not want to sponsor someone else. I was like, I'm just now starting to feel sane. I don't need someone else bringing their crazy into my life. Like, I really don't think that's going to work for me. And when I started sponsoring other people, it was like that what was talked about, you know, the service. It was finally not about me. It was like, yeah, like, pray, let the person in, just sit there, go through the book, hear their fifth step. The first time I heard somebody else's fifth step, it was like, whoa. It was like, I really understood. But anyways, I'm jumping ahead. But so the first step was like, oh, I'm powerless over alcohol. My life's unmanageable. I'm like, eh, I'm powerless over alcohol. I don't know about the unmanageability part. I wasn't, like, super convinced. Until I went further on in the steps, and, you know, a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. And I was like, well, I don't really know that I'm insane. Like, I had a lot of questions about these steps and, like, a lot of pride. I really did this leveling of the pride that the big book talks about. Like, not a lot of us want to do that. This is a leveling of pride, this program, because my pride kept me drunk. So yeah, it's going to try to fight to keep me out there. But thankfully I was broken enough and fearful enough to drink. I was like, I did not want to drink. And I knew I didn't want to drink, but I didn't know how not to drink. And you all knew. So I was like, I'm going to blindly trust you because I have no freaking clue, like, what else to do. I had nowhere else to turn. So we did the bedevilments in the chapter of the agnostic. The chapter to the agnostic, and, like, I wrote out the bedevilments, and I started to see, oh, yeah, I have a trouble with personal relationships, and, oh, I'm having a hard time keeping it, you know, with my finances, and, you know, I have trouble with depression. And as I started to write these things out, I was like, maybe I am insane, or, like, I've been acting insane, and I could see it, you know, and that's what, like, doing the work, writing it out has shown me. It shows me myself when I'm blinded and I don't want to see myself, when I want to convince myself of the whatever delusional story I'm telling myself to feel bad about me, whatever's going to lead me to a drink, essentially. And so then, okay, so I came to believe, yeah, if there's a higher power, it's not me. And then, okay, turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Okay. And this big book says God is either everything or he's nothing. And I was like, well, he's not nothing. I just don't know if he's everything yet. Like, I don't know. How do I get there? So I was, like, a month sober, and I decided to randomly go on a camping trip by myself. And I left my sponsor's house having talked about the everything or nothing, and I proceeded to go on a camping trip. And as soon as I got there, to Ginny Springs, highly recommend it, it clicked for me. And I thought I had this grand idea to go camping. God guided me there. I thought I had this grand idea to walk into Sunshine Group. God guided me there. I thought I had a grand idea to go to AA. God guided me there. I mean, I, like, took a lot of credit for this stuff, that really I was just broken and following the light, you know? I'm not that, like, smart. If not, I would have been sober a long time ago. So yeah, I'm in nature, and, like, it makes sense to me. You know, everybody has their own understanding of a higher power, and it started to, like, click, like, oh, the squirrels in the trees, and, like, you know, the wind, and I was like, oh, like, I'm a part of something, like, life is happening, and, like, I'm a part of it. And then I started to build a relationship with a higher power. Fourth and fifth step was revolutionary. I had a blast writing that fourth step. Like, I was like, yeah, I'm mad at this person. And, like, I've been, like, thinking about my resentments every time I went to a bar and talked to the bartender. Like, I had no problem writing it down. But the tricky part was my part. Where was I selfish, self-centered, dishonest, afraid, inconsiderate? And thank God for the fifth step, because I'm like, maybe I was, like, cherry picking, like, different thing, like, oh, maybe I was dishonest this time, but I don't think this time. And I left there, my sponsors, I was realizing, like, oh, I'm supposed to have all of these, like, pretty much checked for every resentment. And it's not just because, it's because it's true. If I have a resentment towards somebody, I'm probably did something really selfish, and demanded something of them selfishly, and was only self-seeking, right? And was, like, just seeing it through my own lens, and I'm sure I was inconsiderate, and whether or not I was directly dishonest, I'm sure I was dishonest to myself about something, and definitely full of fear. And that's the other thing. I came in here, and I was like, I'm not really afraid of a lot. I don't know what you guys mean. And then I was like, whoa. I just stayed a little longer, and I was like, I'm afraid of everything. And fear is driving all of my decisions. Every phone call, every email, every conversation. Like, it's like there's some sort of level of fear that has driven that in my life. And, but yeah, it just takes time sometimes, you know, to get that clarity. And I'm grateful I don't see it all right away, because I might not stick around. Like, if God showed me every single thing about me, I might just be like, it's easier to drink. But, like, it's like, you know, that's why I say more will be revealed. So, you know, I do the fourth and fifth steps to the best of my ability, and it's a lifelong thing. And I've done a few of those, maybe like four inventories, I don't know. Anyway, and then, so, and also something about the fifth step is I was, like, willing to take a bunch of stuff to the grave. I was like, there's some things I'm totally ashamed of. That's not even that big a video. It's more like a pride thing. And I said it to this person, and it was so freeing. Like, she didn't judge me. She even called me a blessing in her life. And I was like, you know all of this horrible stuff about me, and you get my phone calls every day, and you still think that I'm a blessing. And that's when I started to understand the compassion in this program, the understanding, the unconditional love that I wasn't capable of, but you were teaching me. Yeah, and the defects, I was like, yeah, cool, listing my defects. And I didn't really understand how the steps 6 and 7 really worked. And 7 says, humbly ask them to remove our shortcomings. And yeah, and I mean, it's an interesting step. I feel like 6 and 7 has been definitely, like, something I'm learning over the years, like, with especially doing, like, 10-step inventory, daily inventory. That's when I was like, wow, like, I'm seeing a lot of these defects every day. It's the same stuff over and over again. And my sponsor was like, well, that's when you bring it to God. That's your 11th step. You do your 10th step, you see these things, you give it to God, and you ask for help. The amends part was, I mean, you guys, like, I was a victim my whole life. You know, I'm the victim. And, like, every guy I dated was an asshole. And, like, everybody was a jerk to me. Like, my mom did this to me. My dad did that to me. And, like, making amends and just saying I'm, like, I, like taking ownership of my part was, well, that was humbling. But it was also, it was, like, really beautiful, and it opened up my heart because it was so closed. I was, like, closed to everybody. I didn't want to be wrong. I didn't want to say I'm sorry. And, like, to actually be like, yeah, I'm willing to, like, own up to my part, it made me a part of the society, you know? And I realized, like, man, like, these amends, it's really, like, it changes the story. Because the story was, this person is this, and they did that to me. And now it's like, oh, like, and most people were, like, super understanding, like, really nice, like, most of the time. But it changes the story from what it was to something else. And that's, like, this whole thing. This program is, like, it's transmuting, you know? And it's just been it's an amazing process. And I guess, like, so sponsoring others has been a journey, right? Like 7 years sober, I've got one sponsee. Like they've like dozens and dozens and dozens have come and gone. And like, I kind of had a crisis when I got my 7 years last month, and I was just like, everybody leaves, and like, oh God. And I'm like, well, I'm sober, you know? And like for that moment in time, they were sober. And I don't know what God's plan is for them. And I don't know what part I'm supposed to play in their sober journey. And, you know, and it's like, it's taught me a lot. But, you know, around 5 years sober, it wasn't doing it for me as much. Like, I'm still sponsoring, but I was like, I need more. I need, like, something to jolt me. And so I got into work with the Tampa Bay Area Institutions Committee, H&I, Hospitals and Institutions. Taking meetings into the Pasco Women's Jail. Mind you, I haven't been arrested before, but it was like for whatever reason when I first got sober, and I'm like new, and people were talking about meetings in jails. I'm like, I'm supposed to do that, and like I don't know why, but it's like it's like carrying the message to the people who need it the most, you know, like in a lot, I don't know, and it's like so hard to get in there. Like you got to be fingerprinted, you got to have this background check, and then you have to go through all this stuff. And it's like so hard to get in there. And most of the time I like, don't want to do it. I'm like, oh, it's that tonight. Okay. But like going there and I just like, hey, if, like I used to drink and now I don't. And like, here's Alcoholics Anonymous. It taught me that this is, can work for you too. Also, we have the Bridge the Gap program. So you can get a ride to a meeting from a volunteer when you get out of here. So like, it's just carrying that message and giving people hope. And it gives me hope, and it keeps me sober. And so, like, I'll just, like, start wrapping up with this weekend. I went to, it's the most insane weekend. I went to Nashville for the AA National Corrections Conference. And I was like, how did I get here? Like, this is, like, so crazy. But, like, when I'm at the airport is when some of my sponsee sister calls me and is like, well, I'm going to go 12-step our sponsor. And I was like, oh, I'm in the airport. And, you know, and, like, it was the most perfect thing because God's like, you're not touching this. Like, you get your hands off this. Like, because I'm like, I'm going to fix it. I'm going to do it. What can I do? I'm going to rise up. And it's like, this isn't, like, focus on you, like, you know, like, do you, like, and so, like, I'm in Nashville in this corrections conference in the middle of all of this service, and, like, all these people who come from all around the country who go into jails, and most people don't want to do that, and it's, like, how did I get, like, why do I get to be here, and, like, some people can't stay sober, you know, and it's, like, I just have to keep going deeper and deeper into this thing, you know, and it's a privilege and it's an honor. And it feels like, you know, I used to think my job was, you know, what defined me and what made me a person of value. But like Alcoholics Anonymous made me a person of value because like now my life isn't about me. It's about helping other people, you know, and as the other gentleman stated, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, look at all the stuff I'm doing. And I have to like watch that, right? But like, at least I'm doing it and it's like helping me stay sober and like, you know, I got asked to speak here and I'm really not feeling great, but like I'm here and because I'm giving back because those women were there that night. I still have my where and when that has all the ladies' names that were there the first night I walked in and I still know a lot of them and they're my friends today and it's so cool. A little bit more about what my life is like now. Like I used to only be in relationships with people who are emotionally unavailable. Those were the qualifications. And I had to pray and be like, God, like, I'm like sober. Like, come on, man. It's been like a few years sober. Like, help me see, like, can I see a good, like a person who like wants to like me, you know? And like that happened. And this person is like so much nicer than me, you know? And it's like crazy. I was always used to being like the nice one. And like, now I realize like I'm kind of a nightmare to live with, but like he's so nice and I never would have liked somebody like that without God, without this program, without thinking I deserved it. You know, and he has a daughter, so I get to be a stepmom today, and I live, you know, have a house. I was always thinking I was gonna just move around and start over every, you know, different city every couple years and, you know, whatever, and climb some invisible ladder. And now I'm like, this is like a real life. Like I have roots grounded here, getting married in April, and That's thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous, 100%, and therapy. But yeah, because like, yeah, it's taken a lot of work to get here to like myself. I remember I was maybe about a year sober and I woke up and I was like, like, I think I'm a good person. Because AA taught me, like, just do the next right thing. Do the next right thing. And for 1 year, I had done the next right thing. And even if I messed up and like yelled at somebody or said the wrong thing, like, I went over and I apologized about it, because like now that kind of thing bothers me, like if I don't apologize, and not, you know, I used to give myself a bunch of excuses why you don't need to be apologizing, F them, and now like that kind of stuff bothers me. So like I've cleared, not only am I clearing the wreckage of my past, but like I'm clearing my future, I don't know, my present, and I don't always do it perfectly, and I slack on my 10 and 11 sometimes, and I feel it, and the people around me feel it. So I know that this thing works. I try to stay in the middle of the boat in AA, you know, and just like, and I'm a forever learner. Like they say, to be open-minded, willing, and honest. And I think open-mindedness has been a big one, because I put AA in a box. I put my sponsor in a box. I put God in a box. And this last year has been really hard. Last year, my house flooded with Hurricane Milton shortly after I had a miscarriage, which was, like, totally devastating to me. So I'm just coming out of the grief. And I've never grieved sober. I've never really, like, grieved at all. So, like, to do it sober, the fact that I don't think about a drink today is a miracle. And it's a result of working these steps. Because I remember, like, when I first came in, I would be like, okay, day one, no drink. Day two, and I'm counting the day, like 101, 102, and like sitting on my hand, don't drink today, don't drink today. It took me a while to throw out that box of wine on my fridge. I was just like staring at it, like it was like, oh, like on top of the fridge. And like, I don't think about alcohol, you know, but I do get honest about when like I'm not feeling right. I went to a concert. Mind you, I go to like a million concerts. Sometimes I go by myself. It's so much fun. But I was not feeling good emotionally and spiritually. I went to a concert, somebody lit up a joint next to me, everyone's drinking, getting just messed up, and I just started crying. And a sponsee calls me and is like, hey, I had this great God moment. And I'm like, thank God. Like, you know, and I just like go outside, put on my headphones, and like, let me get me out of here. And so like that's how like, you know, God works in my life. And I know like, oh, that's not a normal thing for me to be feel so vulnerable around. Like usually I'm neutral, like the 10-step promises talk about it, like neutral around drugs and alcohol. But what, like I recognize when I'm not, and that's good. And I start to like get really honest. And I hope to try to stay as honest as I can so that I can stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety and to be there for my family. Because I kind of love life today, and even though sometimes I feel bad, like I feel really sad today, I'm okay with that. I don't have to run away from it. And I feel really grateful and honored that I get to have feelings today. And I don't know, just be a part of society, be a human, and not run away. That's it. Thanks.